Let's go.
Let's go.
All right, yeah, let's get the show started. Welcome to episode 10 of the Cannabis Maker Podcast. We are welcome today with Corey, David, Forzana, Johnny, Jared, Alexandra, and Dawn. And today it's a bit of a special kind of topic and something that's definitely on the minds of many people across the world. I feel like we're bringing a little bit more on the international perspective and getting some discussion points, getting a little bit of information about medical patient access, medical cannabis, how patients in different European countries can start to benefit from medical cannabis, how they can maybe look at increasing access, what we can learn from other industries, what we can learn from existing markets like Canada, the US, who are already going big on it, and really just kind of letting the conversation go and flow. Before we get started on today's session of the Cannabis Maker Podcast, we're going to take a quick second to give a shout out to our sponsors. Today's episode is self-sponsored by Nordic Herbzone. Nordic Herbzone is Norway's first cannabis and hemp brand and works with the best medical cannabis doctors, pharmacists, and patients to provide more information and access to medical cannabis patients in Norway and Europe. If you're interested in a medical cannabis prescription and want to find out more, head to NordicHerbzone.com. 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 I'll let Corey start off a little bit because I wanted to ask, like, or just kind of bring it in on the medical cannabis side. What is going on in Canada?
Definitely has been going through its own trials and tribulations as far as the medical system is concerned. With our federal legalization system that came into place, the medical system was really kind of put to the side. All these facilities that were originally built for the medical cannabis game were all pivoting and turning into the recreational market, and that resulted in today being at a stance where there really is no difference between medical and recreational cannabis at this point. There are a couple of outliers, of course, maybe five or six LPs or licensed producers of cannabis that are focusing on that medical portion, but with all intents and purposes, these facilities are kind of dual use in that way. So it's very difficult to find a good quality medicine at this point, especially in the flower market. It's quite difficult to find something that you're satisfied with, because it's also been one of the unfortunate things that are happening is these discount recreational brands are trying to be passed off as medicine to patients as well. And so that's been one of the biggest frustrations, is just the outright dilution and kind of forced attempt to take out the medical products. I'd like to probably make the argument that the only real medicine that's being made right now is the protections that we have as a home grower, being a medical patient here in Canada. Without that, I don't think anyone really affords their medicine or is comfortable with the quality of medicine that they're getting for the price that they're paying. So that's what we've seen with federal legalization so far. It's been a very jaded experience for the medical consumer here.
Yeah, one thing I want to go back on and make clear for the people that are listening in as well, and something that you mentioned that's definitely worth pointing out. In Europe at the moment, what we have generally considered as medical cannabis passes through a pharmacy or is sold in a pharmacy, and it's certain strains of this cannabis that are determined as medical and are grown and standardized and cultivated with all these, let's say, limits and guidelines in place. So for people to hear that in markets like Canada, and I'm aware of this in the US as well, that there's no real distinction on, anything from THC or terpenes or real cannabinoid levels that distinguishes medical from recreational flower. Or even if we're looking at concentrates or extracts, that's something that comes as quite of a shock, because over here, like if I take the example of the Netherlands, where it's been in plan since about 1996. The strain of Bedrican has been around since about 2003. And these have just been kind of continuously standardized, and it hasn't really changed much since. So to hear that patients have difficulty with this access and like this stability and the, just being able to have continuous access to a quality product is quite surprising to hear when everybody thinks that Canada is so developed and so far ahead in the game.
I like to talk about the most is, I mean, yes, we are, let's be clear, like federal legalization is a good thing in a lot of respects, but it is good to be sober about the entire situation, acknowledge the problems about it, and then hopefully have a constructive dialogue about those problems so that we can push through them and, you know, really serve the needs of both markets instead of just really leaving the one market in the dust. And again, I'd like to make an argument saying that that market is really the reason why cannabis is legal in Canada, is because of that push, because of constitutional challenges that were won and that made, you know, politicians here forcefully rethink and reshape their cannabis policy across this nation. So, you know, we did have that leverage, but right now, 2 years down from legalization, almost 3 years down, it's been very frustrating and heartbreaking to see what's been happening in Canada.
So just also on this note, maybe to hear a little bit from Farzana on what it's like in the UK. And I know Farzana is doing, let me be frank, a shit ton about medical cannabis, patient access, patients' needs, explaining to them what can be, you know, how they can really advance in the UK, where I believe it's quite restrictive still. So yeah, give us a little bit of an explanation, Farzana. What exactly is happening in the UK?
Oh, thank you, Liam, for the introduction. At the moment, the patients are having a little bit of a hard time. So I've had to start a new campaign called Free Our Medicine, #, because our medicine is technically not being available for us once it's been prescribed by our doctors, which can cause a decrease in our quality of life, amplification of symptoms. And it's not really what we was expecting. The laws changed so that patients would be able to have continued access without disruption. However, this hasn't happened. What's happening in our name is not what we expected. We don't expect to have patients who are getting their medicine confiscated by the police. We're not expecting patients to have to adhere to rigorous rules, sign contracts to be able to access their medicine. We're not expecting, you know, a disruption in supply due to pharmacies and not getting the right prescription and small sort of, I say small, but these small things have a large impact on the patient's life. And I think one of the things that's happening is we have to think about the integrity of the people in this industry that are, you know, making these or monopolizing what's happening in our medical market. We have people that don't necessarily focus on what matters to the patient. They're focusing on healthcare for profit. And this is the problem. Like in the UK, we have medicines that patients can't afford. We have patients paying for medicine out of pocket and having to trial different products which they can't afford. Lots of the patients that would need access to medical cannabis are on low incomes. Some of them have no income. And so to expect them to try and find this money to, you know, afford medical cannabis every month is disheartening, because realistically we're setting, you know, the patient up to fail. They can maybe afford it for a month or two, and then there could be, you know, an unexpected financial cost and they can no longer afford it. And it's just really sad that I've been speaking to quite a few patients who've been having quite a negative impact. However, we did have a pilot program, which, you know, was started with me in 2018, that really worked for patients. We had personalized care. We had access to our medicine, albeit sometimes we did have to travel abroad, but we actually had access to fresh medicine that worked. Our doctor cared about what happened to us and how the medicine impacted us. And this sometimes is lost in this sort of vertical integrated system that we have. The patient is, we're using buzzwords like patient experience, but who is really looking at what we're experiencing? Not having our meds is really stressful. And the fact that we have regulations that should ensure we actually always continue to have them, the law was changed. Is anybody really making sure these regulations are adhered to? And this is one of the main things that I'm trying to do. And as you said, Liam, there's so much I've got to do. I have to try and ensure that the clinics are treating the patients with dignity and respect, and not, you know, the patients are not experiencing bias and stigma, because that also impacts patient retention, which is something that is, you know, quite low in the UK. So we have a lot to do. I'm just trying my best, and I just want us all to remain hopeful, because yes, it is difficult, but there is hope we can make the right changes and have a medical industry market that works for us.
Thank you, Farzana, for sharing that. It's Øystein from Nordic Herbson here, and we have so similar problems with this in Norway. The medical cannabis has been accessible or like accessible in Norway since 2018, I think. And the problem in Norway is that the stigma is still so strong, and the doctors in Norway do not have any experience or any knowledge about cannabis or the benefits or the cannabinoids or anything about it at all. And then the problems start with the doctors don't even want to talk about cannabis with their patients. Is when the people are coming in, they are more or less thrown at the door, just asking about it. So we have been working with the doctors abroad from the Netherlands to give more access to the patients. So, but of course they have to travel to get their medicine, but at least it's what we can work with at the moment. So absolutely understand your situation in the UK.
Main issues we also need to focus on as well is when the patient can't access their prescribed cannabis, they still have a need for that medicine. So what ends up happening is they have to go to the legacy market. And sometimes, obviously, that may not be easy for all types of patient populations. So we're ultimately putting the patient in danger from having to go and seek and search for, you know, legacy cannabis, when really it should be an easy thing to do. It's a medicine, especially in the UK, it's a legal medicine. So it should follow the same pathway as any other medicine, just for example, like insulin. If we had a situation where diabetic patients could not get access to insulin for, you know, 3 weeks, like the cannabis patients, there would be uproar. And I think we need to be treating, you know, the med like cannabis the same. And this is what is not happening. And this is what is one of the main things that needs to change now. We don't have time to even wait to, you know, discuss it. We need to be making the direct changes like, you know, I've been trying to do today and will continue to do in the future.
No, absolutely. I'm just going to chime in here again. This Liam here. It's interesting to hear that. You know, I always say this as well. We have all of these problems that kind of start to manifest in the same areas, in the same industries, across the same countries. And where we've seen now in the UK, where you were saying, Farzana, for example, having that access and no longer having the real access to fresh medicine or the real quality that was being given to patients, now being maybe, I'm going to say, politically affected by the whole Brexit move. But just seeing how this changes in industry and when certain countries start to take things into their own hands, how a lot of the time messed up it can be. I know I'm just going to take the example of Germany. I know people applaud Germany for having an amazing medical cannabis market, for having a lot of options for their patients, for having it very kind of open, but it really isn't that easy. I know recently I saw people that were applauding the number of health insurances that have been gone through for German patients, but still hearing from German patients that you need to, you know, have those funds to be able to go through with a lawyer to be able to technically take your health insurance company to court in order to win that court case to say that you have the right to have your cannabis as a medicine covered by health insurance. And it's like Farzana was saying, it comes down to the simple fact of the matter is we're not experiencing this with other medication. There's not these lengthy processes to go through with these mad amounts of paperwork, struggles like traveling with it, being maybe arrested or having your medicine seized when you're really just carrying it with you and having everything documented. We're still seeing a lot of lack of education and confusion on law enforcement side. And I think it really also comes down to that lack of kind of centralized communication and discussion around it, because there is a lot happening in the EU cannabis space. There's a lot happening in the UK cannabis space, in the Canadian, and there's a lot going on behind the scenes in medical. So it kind of becomes difficult to translate this all the way down to the patient level when, like you say as well, Farzana, the patient retention level is quite low. There's also quite a few patients that will go through and they'll get a medical cannabis prescription. And then maybe after that, they'll have to turn back to the black market because it simply is not affordable. Especially recently, we've just had more than 100 patients across Norway who just haven't been able to travel to get their medication And then, of course, you're looking at when black market prices go up, or should I say legacy market prices go up during what we've had recently, then it really puts people's lives in jeopardy because these people also have families and kids. And it really brings a lot on the table that we don't really start to think about that much on the forefront, but there is so much involved at so many levels. I'd love for somebody else as well to come in and give a bit of a word on medical cannabis, patient access, maybe how you've seen it develop in your market over the years, and maybe what we can start to learn from it.
California, America, we have all these different states that are different places, but California kind of started in 96. We had Prop 215 come out that allowed patients to have access, and then that got exploited to where people were using those rec cards to grow 100 plants in the hills, and making hundreds of pounds. And then they had to kind of revamp that. Then they passed Prop 64, I guess about 2 years ago now, year and a half ago, 2 years ago. And now, basically, anybody here can grow 6 plants, and they can travel around with their plants, and that's been pretty huge. So that really allows patients, and this is the message we've been pushing all along at Lost Coast Wellness, is how to grow. We're really showing people how to make their own stuff so that they're not dependent on us, and they just use us as a bridge to kind of understand what they actually, their rights are, and then empower them with different genetics and kind of let them kind of make their own medicine and show them how easy it really can be. You can make it really difficult if you want to start, separating compounds and really kind of going into that part of it. But, what we've pioneered here is like really making it just as dumbed down, simple, so that anybody can do it. And it really becomes accessible for people now. So we'll get them onto a medical cannabis card, even though they may not stay on it. Like for instance, we just had someone come to us in order to work with us in the medical cannabis zone. They'll get a medical cannabis card. And then that allows them a little bit than Prop 64, and it strengthens the medical cannabis side of it. And that's really what we want to push more than, just recreational. We're trying to underpin through education that it's medicine. It really is medicine. Even if it's relaxing you, well, that's great, because stress is the number one killer. But percent THC to relax. And so educating people how to actually relax with the plant and so many different understand it and want to use it for, for a while as a lifestyle. People don't necessarily want to adopt getting high as a lifestyle, but if they can use that plant to do all sorts of stuff to improve their lifestyle, then that's where the benefits are really going to come in the plant. And if we can do that through Prop 64 and having all great. And that's what's going on here in America, but I know it's not like that, or I say it here in California and in America all over the place. It's different from state to state. Virginia just came on. They'll allow you to grow. I think it's 4 plants there. But the point is every state has a different, New York just came out with their regulations. And every state has something different in terms of how many plants you can grow and potency and this so and that.
This is something that I wanted to address real quick as well, because this is where I've seen a huge difference and a real differentiation in the markets between what we've seen going on in California, the U.S. in general, Canada. This is something that we don't have in Europe, right? There is no real push on that home growth side for medical. Because medical has been so forced into that pharmaceutical throughout the pharmacy, standardized, there is no real kind of educational push or real movement to have people home growing their own medicine. So when we talk about what cannabis as a plant can do for everybody and all the great uses it has, this is something that still to this day is kind of being shied into the shadows, we can kind of say, in Europe, because I don't feel like there's enough of that on the medical side to be telling people this is what you can be growing at home because of the way that the legislation works, right? If we got medical somewhere, it means that there's medical supply. Switzerland is one of the few places now where, like, you know, they're putting in legislation to grow medical cannabis, but they have legislation on hemp. So even if you're growing hemp in your backyard, that could mean you're still subject to somebody coming and testing it and making sure that there's no THC in there, right? So we're really not seeing that kind of growing culture in the medical sense, I feel, kind of pick up in Europe. And that's something that's, yeah, it's kind of sad because we're not seeing that whole educational benefit.
Guys should just put together, you know, a group that tries to lobby for and legislate for home grow personal use. Because that's where you can that's where it really happens. Look, once you've grown, you know, when you grew your first plant and you smoke from it, that experience is spiritual. And if you can provide that to people, they'll get it, and then they'll quickly understand, you know, oh my God, you know. And then now they're hunting the different cultivars to see what they want. And yes, of course, it'll take a while to really, you know, develop that side of the industry. But what we noticed with these people that we educate, yeah, they're not typical legacy farmers that can make the most amazing looking pot. But when you're making medicine, all you got to do is provide it with the right zone, the right soil, the right light, the right stuff, and it'll make medicine. And when you concentrate it into an oil, it doesn't matter what it looked like, you know, in the jar. And so, you know, I always just tell people, don't be discouraged if it doesn't look like what you're buying in the store. It's making those compounds, and you'll get better at growing because you'll want to get better at making more. And if you don't, then it doesn't matter, because what you just grew is medicine. The plant's going to do what it needs to do. It's not like, you know, if it doesn't look right, it doesn't work. So we just encourage people to just try it one time and see that you can actually. It's very easy. It's a weed. You know, you set it up with the right soil, the right light, the right air. And because you're not trying to grow 600 plants, you're just trying to grow six or one even, or three. You know, it's much easier to manage and really care about it and take care of it and begin to have an intimate relationship with the plant. And that ultimately was what heals people, is that relationship. Because it's them diagnosed or them, you know, dosing themselves and knowing how much to take each day, that begins to give them that intimate relationship. And that's when they heal, you know?
Yeah, and I wholeheartedly agree with you, Jared. The one, you know, part of the frustration here in Canada is that, you know, in our federal legalization laws, it does say that we are allowed to grow four plants recreationally. And essentially it's been left up to, if you're in a renting situation, you're not allowed to grow because they have somehow been allowed to put this in their lease, and they include the wordage or the verbiage inside of these agreements that say you're not allowed to grow for medical and recreational purposes. So they effectively have shut down a lot of home grows. Now, I know there are, again, legal challenges that are moving through some of the courts, but I want to give people the heads up on that. You know, I know some other places laws get put into place and, you know, trying to have them repealed or have them amended is quite a difficult thing. So I do want to make it known that there, you know, even though the federal legalization could outline that, there'll be some de facto bylaw of some sort at the local level that might also stifle the efforts to, you know, even produce medicine. I know the argument can be had about producing recreational plants versus, you know, medical plants. But again, you know, I wanted to say that in the context of what, you know, you last said, Jared, was it's just a weed, you know, like we should have some sense about the entire subject, I feel. But that's, you know, that's what's happening up here in Canada. And, you know, like I said, I just want to kind of let people know about that. So when you guys have to take on that fight for your federal, your national legalization movements, you know, you can have that insight now and hopefully kind of preempt any, you know, silly things that could impede our way for making that connection with our medicine, with our plant. Because like you said, Jared, it really is special. It really is.
100%. I agree with you 100%. And it really helps, you know, it's really starting at the local level, organizing, you know, and educating those that do not know that are in positions to lead us. And coming from an honest place of really trying to help them and really trying to educate, not trying to, you know, say I'm smarter and you've been wrong, I've been right, ha ha ha, listen to me. It's a real approach to, you're going to feel good when you begin to help people feel better. It helps you. You know, forget about the people you're helping, but you actually are going to feel good and wake up every day with a new zest for life when you're helping people live and you're helping people, you know, be healthy. That's a different, you get addicted to, you know, that. It's a whole different lifestyle. I don't know how to explain it, you know, but once you're helping people become better, that's a different experience. It's a different reality. And that's what we need to educate them on, that you can be happier in life and you can do better things and you can do more amazing stuff because you're helping people. This thing really does help people. It's not a scam. It's not a bunch of pot growers that are trying to figure out how to keep the game going. This shit really works.
Yeah, Jared.
Let's figure it out together.
I lived down there for 4 years, man. And like born and raised in Canada, but spent 4 years down there loving the cannabis plant. That's how, you know, I really got my introduction into it as medicine. And that passion has carried over to where people actually think I'm from California. So
that's
really
awesome.
Yeah, there's really like something to be said about that infectious attitude as a medicine. I could 100% personally attest to that, my friend.
Are we going to come in real quick on this one, though, and just want to, you know, kind of bring in another couple of touching points to the conversation on medical and as well what keeps me fascinated, like you were saying, Jared, when you're helping people and making a difference, just that feeling in general that it gives you maybe a little bit more motivation to actually go out and do more and do bigger things and better things. And I also just wanted to bring in Alexandra on this point because I know that, you know, she's the one that's having a real contact, direct access as well to the people that are asking questions about cannabis, maybe coming into the stores, looking for specific things. Like, Alexandra, if you're there, what are we kind of hearing from some patients who are looking at medical? What kind of questions are they asking?
I don't know if everybody knows, but I'm a bud tender over in Washington State. I actually just got my medical consultant's card here over in Washington State.
Congratulations.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Good job.
Thank you. So over here in Washington State, we are similar to California. We can grow up to 15 plants in medical, depending if that's what your provider prescribes you. But it's kind of hard out here to find a medical provider that will prescribe you or give you a medical card. It's weird how Washington seems to be blue and like pushing forward from the outside, but it's still kind of conservative in a sense. But a lot of the times people coming in from the area I'm at, they are really new to cannabis. Where I'm from in Washington State, it's very conservative still. It's very kind of red leaning. It's a little weird here. But they come in kind of having no knowledge, and they just come in basically hearing what they hear from like people around them who have smoked. Like from back in the day before it was legal here in the States, I'm kind of just looking for high THC, but a lot of the times I try to just give them knowledge, let them know like it's not always about the numbers. Here in Washington State too, with our testing, they can go to different labs and kind of put in the highest number that they find, which can kind of really be misleading, especially when people are coming in for the medical portion of it. But yeah, I just try to educate everybody because like I said, on the side that I'm at in the state, it's really still kind of a new idea that cannabis can be a medicine and can help people and isn't just something that you use to get high. But yeah.
Oh, thank you so much for that. I really, really appreciate that. It's kind of showing us all over, you know, that, I mean, it's kind of interesting that we have those abilities in those markets when, you know, people have the option to talk to the person selling them the cannabis. But that also puts it on a very interesting pivot, right? Because the way it's working in Europe at the moment is you go to your doctor. Your doctor will say if you, you know, are going to be prescribed medical cannabis or not, depending on your current condition, on symptoms, etc., if it's a type of doctor who will be willing to do it. But, you know, when it comes to actually purchasing the cannabis or picking out the strains, a lot of the time it can be very difficult and there's not a lot of choice. You know, it's quite limited still. So I think it's kind of interesting to see that patients have that ability to come in and kind of choose and maybe hear off what other people are saying. But it's also, I don't know, it's a very, very restrictive kind of system that we have still in Europe at the moment. But it's still more based on, I would say, a doctor's experience. But seeing these types of programs that you guys are having with medical cannabis and getting people more educated on it is definitely a step in the right direction, because that is also something we're still severely lacking, is, you know, more standardized ways of educating people from different target groups, be it doctors, be it physicians, be it pharmacists, be it the patients themselves. There's a lot of sporadic different efforts going on all over the place. So it's definitely interesting to see that in some states they have a bit more of a standardized one.
I'm just really curious about the U.S., how it'll affect it when it goes federally legal. Just because, like Jared was saying, it is different from every state that has medical or recreational cannabis. Like, I know in Florida, they're only strictly medical, but they have to be the producer, the processor, and the seller, basically, the dispensary. They have to own all three of that. So I'm curious to see how the U.S. Market will kind of change once it goes federally legal.
I'm hearing that once it goes federally legal, there's going to be a cap on the THC. And those that want to go higher than that cap will have to fall into that medical zone that's pre-existing in that state. So, you know, we'll just basically have like a 10% cap everywhere. Everyone has access to it. It's really going to push the one-to-one market. You know, it's going to really push all of these other genetics. It's going to be a good thing, because, you know, people can still have access to the high THC if they really need it, or, you know, so that's all I heard.
Yeah, here the conversation is really mixed about the benefits of it, because these are supposed to be recreational stores. There are some provinces or states here in Canada that if their dispensaries are run by the government there, like they have a pretty strict stance as far as talking about terpenes being medical, and it's not really recreational. So they kind of guide their bartenders not to get into some of those subjects. So that's kind of also attributing to, I think, you know, instead of having a nice smooth curve and, you know, some of the accesses where even like the information is hard to streamline across the country, you know, having lived literally on one coast and the other through this entire legalization so far, there's some pretty stark differences where, you know, for example, if you're on the West Coast, it seems that they really push that educational experience about the terpenes, about cannabinoids, and, you know, really educating the customer on what they're doing. Of course, you know, having just kind of sitting back and watching in some of these dispensaries where, you know, people have tunnel vision, you know, they got the horse blinders on. They'll just go straight to the till and they'll ask you, you know, the cheapest product for the most THC in that way. So I'm interested to see, you know, how we develop that conversation over to terpenes and the importance of that. I'm hoping that the restriction of THC isn't what kind of forcefully makes us pivot that conversation. I'm, you know, I was hoping it would be a little bit more organic in the conversations and kind of, you know, figuring that out at the dispensary level. But that seems to be what's happening right now. So I'm interested to see that, how that THC cap might work. I believe that they're doing it in Israel right now. I think that's how the system is set up with a THC cap as well. But I'm interested to see that in the United States. I'd be very, interested to see the lessons out of that one.
Yeah, over in Washington, a lot of our producers will put like terpene profiles on their products, which is really nice because it allows us to, like you said, Corey, kind of get people to open their minds that it's not just only about the THC numbers. There's so many other components that go into this plant. And it allows us to also show them that like companies are really trying to show the different profiles and like what these things can do. We have a company here called Blue Roots, and they're really good with their packaging. They'll put the terpene profile and kind of give a little like tidbit about like every terpene that's on there, to let you know like if it's going to be a relaxation feeling, what kind of that terpene is going to do. So I think if they also kind of allow that, it'll be a lot more educational for the consumer.
Yeah, I've only seen two producers up here of cannabis that actually put their terpenes on the label so far. And there's quite a few licenses up here, so it's just starting to pivot. And then I wanted to ask you, Alexandra, are you seeing a consistent terpene profile? Like, has there been multiple batches of the same product that have come through, and has there been any unfortunate cases where the terpene levels are below a certain percentage that is expected, or how has that been playing out?
So it's kind of, that's a thing between every company, like they can label whatever they want on their packaging, really. In Washington State, they kind of just have to meet certain criteria, obviously, like labeling for like 21 and over, this product can impair you, all these other things. But like every producer can kind of do their own thing, because we have some companies that they'll have, for instance, ETF as an indica, which is obviously more sativa leaning. And that's kind of hard to tell customers when they come in and they're like, oh, like, do you have a certain strain? And I don't have it from the company that they want. And then the other company is saying something totally different. So there's also that part of it with like producers and processors kind of still not being, I guess, everyone on the same page, which is sometimes frustrating as a bud tender too, because you have the consumer coming in asking for a certain thing and then the label is saying something different, but you know what it is and you can't tell them what it's like. Basically, you can't tell them what is not on the label, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, 100%. That doing a little dipping into my toes on the retail side as well, it's, I can 100% understand the conundrum that you're in. It's, you know, that's one of the things up here is that pretty much all the products are the same. So we don't see too much variation as far as those cultivars are concerned. So that's also interesting to note. I appreciate you sharing that.
And at the end of the day, it really is kind of, it is a personal experience. You know, I've seen so many people take the same strain and have completely different experiences with it. And certain strains is more of a variant. So certain strains you get more people are like have wildly different things. And then certain strains are kind of, everybody kind of does have more of a similar experience. And so it's so varying to the experience. We try to approach it from, you know, this is a journey, and you're going to try the five things. You might get lucky and hit the first one out of the park, but the reality is that doesn't happen very often. So you're going to try spectrums. So try all the way to the left, try all the way to the right, you know, try your daytime, try your nighttime, try your different spectrums that hit a zone. And then tell them to really try to gather that experience. How did that work for you? And that's how you then come back to me and say, this zone worked for me and this zone didn't. And so what as you can do as a bud tender or as a doctor or whoever, a friend, you then kind of suggest more strains in that zone that they had a good experience with. So that allows them to kind of then tailor that user experience a little further. And in doing that, they're educating themselves to what was different between that first one and the second one I'm trying. Oh, it's two terpenes. Oh, well, that's cool. And it's a little bit of change in my CBD. Okay. And so you just educate them that this is the process and we're going to help you go through it. And here's how we're going to do it. And that allows people to really get the experience as fast as they can, tailored for their use, their end use. So, that's kind of how we approach it, just because it is so variance. And when you really try to tell somebody what they're going to experience with a certain product and then it doesn't work, or, you know, then you kind of lose them, you lose their trust, and it wasn't your fault. It was just the way their body responded to it. And you're really trying to give them something special. Now all of a sudden they're going to go somewhere else. So they're going to, and then the confusion sets in as to what's really, you know, so just walking them down the road of the experience is the best thing you can do for them. That way there is no, it's an honest approach to helping them. And then because you're so knowledgeable about the different strains, you can kind of steer them in different directions. And then that is what they begin to really trust. And then their experience going through that is what allows them to trust their own self and continuing on down that road.
Just going to jump in there, Jared Øystein here. That what you're saying there is very correct. For me personally, with medical cannabis, with medical cannabis from the pharmacy, with like what is it called, a lab test, and you can know what THC percent and CBD percent and all other cannabinoids, and actually go between the different strains that you're given, know what's in them, to then learn yourself what's the difference, how the different terpenes work on you, and how the different cannabinoids work on you. For me, for example, you have the Bedrock, and that's 22% THC and less than 1% CBD. It's a sativa one with more or less a Jack Hatter. And then you also have a Bedica, that's 13% THC and 6% CBD. And for me, the Bedica is gonna get me more baked, more sleepy than the other, of course, sativa indica. But the difference in THC, that I get more tired, get more sleepy of a strain that has 13% THC instead of 22%, and then you have some CBD in it as well. So to actually learn and get to learn what actually cannabis is with a map, it's a lot easier to learn.
I'm gonna come in here real quick again and say it's Liam, and I'm just gonna touch on that, because with Bedica, for example, it's, and what we tell patients as well, and what people don't know, is it's just the higher factor of myrcene in there. That's the reason that this one has got that nice kind of cushy, earthy aroma. It really sends people to sleep, and obviously having a little bit of CBD in there just really helps your body. It just helps it process it and work with it. We know, we heard from it last time as well, the breakdown on the entourage effect and how that's working from Dr. O. But just combining all those and being aware of it, I feel personally as well, has a much more, I'm not going to say intense, but definitely a more notable effect in terms of how you're processing this as a medicine. If you start to be able to notice the certain differences that those certain strains or terpenes give you, that certain tweak on your day, or a little bit of different outlook, or you had a little bit more drive or energy at that time of day compared to usual, or for me, for example, it's the fact that I don't wake up at 4 a.m. like on point every morning, and I can actually sleep through the whole night. All these little things that you start to take note of can really help improve your overall medical experience with the plant.
I love it. You guys are awesome.
Yeah, so one thing I also tell people that come in, because like you said, Jared, everybody's different when it comes to cannabis. I mean, I know for myself, like, sativa is not something that I can smoke. I don't like the way it makes me feel. It makes me feel very anxious. But for some people, they only smoke sativa. So I like to tell them to kind of journal their experience, and because, like I said, every farm can say something different, and it cannot be what they're telling you. So I'm the middle person almost, and then they come back and they're like, well, it said it was going to do this, but it's not doing it. And then that's why I kind of let people know to, like, write it down, kind of put your experience down, and, like, let yourself know what works and what doesn't work for you.
Also about going to touch on the sativa here. For me as well, but it's more on the hazes. For example, silver haze, lemon haze, and all these other kind of hazes, they fuck my head up. But all the other sativas, like the jacquardia, that the medical and other sativas is it's really calm.
So that's when it comes back to the terpenes, right? Because if we look at that and you're seeing limonene in there and you're seeing high levels of limonene that just stresses people to fuck out, even though it can calm some people, we're also seeing this also has an effect in certain people with ADHD, that it's also the other way around. So limonene can also make just symptoms worse sometimes, but in certain cases, for some people, like we said, it's different for everybody, right? So it can also calm them down. I know for myself, like for 2-3 years, it was like something like amnesia haze was the perfect balance of also on terpenes and THC level that just focused, you know, it really helped me like dog down and just work on stuff, get focused, do a couple of hours with a couple of joints. And that kind of level of focus is something that I struggled to find with other strains. You know, I even at that point, it was a amnesia that really helped me also sleep, which is for some people like crazy. How could you smoke a strong, what we know as a sativa strain and go to sleep? But then there's also the kind of cushy things that I felt in that sense, while it did have a more relaxing effect on the body, it definitely did not calm down my mind.
Definitely me as well, in a nutshell. Any cultivars with limonene in them make my anxiety and my brain just overwork. There's only one haze cultivar, the Super Silver variety, that seems to not make me go crazy, or the haze, like you said, Liam, it actually puts me to sleep. I know if I'm smoking a haze cultivar, I'm generally out in 40 minutes. So that's why I tend to lean on other cultivars, to say the least. Because, yeah, it's been an uncomfortable experience for me. And I've also anecdotally seen people on the production floor also have quite strong asthmatic related events in rooms that have limonene dominant cultivars in them. So that is one of the terpenes that is of particular interest to me, because it's really the only terpene I've been able to attribute some I'll call them adverse reactions, to say the least. You know, I've had people who are not asthmatic and go into some of these rooms and, you know, definitely need a puffer to get out of these situations. So it's kind of scary in that way. You know, that's why I've really focused on, you know, sticking to that terpene nomenclature, you know, as a cultivator, especially, you know, sativa and indicas when I'm growing, it's nothing to do with the things that I'm smoking. So it's definitely good to figure out those terpenes and see, you know, kind of unlock some of these mysteries that we're all going through.
Do you think it would be wise for us to ask for these terpenes and, you know, some of the effects of what they could be on the labeling? Because I think sometimes we put a lot of onus on the consumer or the patient, who also has a lot to manage apart from just, you know, re-educating themselves. So do you think there's something that we could do or the producer could do to be able to help the patient transition into learning about the terpenes, the endocannabinoid system?
Yeah, I mean, I wholeheartedly believe that LPs should be putting terpene percentages on their labels. It shouldn't be something to be a market differentiator. And that's kind of what it's being used for right now here in Canada. It's, you know, really being seen as trying to be a, you know, difference maker in the market more so than, you know, trying to actually educate people. So I think the bottom line, I guess, that's been troubling for me here in Canada is just the lack of kind of willingness of these, you know, especially some of these newer dispensaries that are opening up here on the West Coast and in British Columbia specifically. We're a little bit late to the game on retail, but they, you know, every time I talk with these general managers or the people that are running these places, and I talk about terpene education, cannabinoid education, they look at me and they roll my eyes and they go, "Hold on, man, like, we're not ready for that yet." I was like, well, you know, like, it's, when are we going to be ready? You know, we've been tossing around indica and sativa incorrectly for all of these years. Like, who's actually going to start turning that wheel over to the right side? So I think it has to be kind of a dual pronged effort where, you know, if producers are forced to put these on their labels, then I feel the bud tenders are going to feel pressure to make sure that they're educated about this stuff, which will in turn, you know, pass hopefully some informational nuggets down the train to the patients so that they can understand what they're consuming. Because without these terpenes on the labels, there's going to be no initiative at all for these dispensary operators to have their bud tenders really learn about these terpenes and pass that knowledge on. And that's, again, that's just reflective of what's happening currently right now up here in Canada. So I'm hoping that that can, you know, have two minds kind of pushing that effort for Zana, I think would be more effective than one. So I hope to see that.
Definitely. I wholeheartedly agree with you, Corey. I think one of the main things I've learned from being a medical cannabis patient is knowing the name of the cultivar is not necessarily as important as knowing the terpene content. And I'm such a huge advocate of, you know, licensed producers labeling the medicine. Because if we teach, it's easier to teach patients about just simple terpenes than teaching them, you know, trying to put them on an educational program. So I think that is one way we could help patients be able to choose, or if they can't choose, doctors be able to choose the right cultivar or a cultivar that would be more suitable for the patient. So they don't have to try, you know, go through the whole list of available flower or products just to find the right one.
Remember, this is something I'm going to butt in on real quick. Because this is a difference that we're seeing in some European markets, right? When we have a market like Germany where you've got so many strains, I really personally believe that this is something that we really should be seeing more of on the doctor side as well, as being explained to the patient when prescribing how to go about with medicine. Because one thing we have is doctors aren't telling their patients how to consume it properly, maybe saying vaporize it or put it in tea. Nobody's really telling you to avoid all the shitty Chinese tech and go for proper vaporizer technology. Nobody's telling you to, you know, what to look out for or what materials to use, how to put your cannabis in tea, at what temperatures the terpenes in your cannabis, in your medical cannabis, at, you know, their boiling points, their melting points, how you can start to put this into food or drinks or maybe go by different routes of administration. But one thing that we're not seeing is a kind of, you know, general consensus on this. And that's one thing that I've got to applaud a bit more on the Netherlands side, because that's where we see doctors that when they only have five medical cannabis strains that are differentiated, we're seeing a little bit more knowledge and going in depth on it, right? In a market like Germany, where a lot of people are being prescribed medical cannabis through telemedicine by just calling in somewhere and having somebody write a simple prescription and paying 200 euros every single month, which I honestly think is ridiculous because that's not real medical help. Right, you got to have somebody that's experienced, that's working with it, that has the knowledge and can really explain to you and say, you need this strain because this has 22% THC, or no, you don't even need to bother with that strain that your other friend who has medical cannabis is smoking. You need this one that has 14 or 13% THC and has a little bit of CBD in there, because I know for a fact that also with that myrcene, that's really going to help you calm down and relax in the evenings when you, as a patient with that condition, need to be relaxed. This isn't something that we're seeing in other medical cannabis markets or really on the big scale, is having that information and knowledge from your doctor and having that all the way through. You know, even when you're picking up your medical cannabis at the pharmacy, it's just like going in there and saying, hi, I'm here for my weed, please, paying money and leaving. You know, there's no education. It's not like, okay, here's this. We just have this batch. And by the way, with this batch, we're giving you this COA that was also provided with it free of charge, where you can see the terpene levels and the THC and CBD content. Nobody's bringing this out to patients, right? So this is something that really is a bit more on the systemic side, I feel like, as well, that needs to be addressed, and just something I wanted to put out there and for everybody to kind of have considered as well, and how we progress in these markets.
Being doctors will tell you is that there's not a lot of research on it, and there's definitely a political push within the Canadian doctors here as well. I was at a medical conference just a couple of years ago, 1 year after legalization, so I want to make that clear. It was federally legal. There was a statement issued by some body called the Canadian Medical Association, which sounds really legitimate. Well, the Canadian Medical Association was stating that there's no medicinal benefit to cannabis. Well, that's kind of weird, because Canada is, like, you know, pretty much at the forefront of a lot of these spaces. And so we were really fortunate that day. To be, you know, again, I was at a medical cannabis conference that day. So we had people in the building that were actual medical doctors. They're actually from our federal regulator, Health Canada. And this is where the confusion comes into play. The Canadian Medical Association is just an association of information, just disseminating opinions to doctors. They don't actually put out any scientific studies or actually do anything specific. They're essentially a membership body that puts out memorandums to their members. So, you know, if a just someone outside of the medical community would say, wow, this is from the Canadian Medical Association. I mean, I don't know about you guys, but like, I would take that pretty seriously coming from a group like that with that sort of name. And so that's one of, you know, a big thing is this still this consistent attempt to provide misinformation where it's really difficult to find an actual general practicing doctor here in Canada to be on the side of cannabis. And again, I know that might sound crazy being from Canada, but unfortunately that's the situation that we're really in here. Again, the medical community has been dragged down through the bottom. And, you know, to your point, Liam, I had the opportunity to take a look at, you know, some of the German websites that are out there to order the cannabis offer, the Apothecary website. There's more information on the Apothecary website about Canadian products than there is available here in Canada about those exact same products. So that's been a tough thing to to reconcile with myself. I mean, that's just crazy to me.
Just to follow up, Liam and Corey, I just wanted to just share that I believe I've had such a beneficial experience with medical cannabis because I had a personalized care experience. I had the same doctor, Dr. McDowell, who's fantastic, a pioneer in cannabis in the UK. He gave me such a personalized experience. He was knowledgeable about the plant and how it was used and how it would impact my body personally. He didn't use a generic form of treating me. He also worked very closely with me to be able to ensure that I wasn't having any adverse reactions, that the medication was doing what it needed to do. He also worked very closely with my dosing. So I was able to reduce my dosage of medical cannabis, but also have the same efficacy, which was really important to me because obviously nobody wants to over-medicate. And I wanted to make sure that I was having the right amount that was also the impact of the cost to make sure it was affordable to manage. So reducing my dosage made it more manageable to have every month. Unfortunately, a lot of patients now are not having that type of care, like Liam's saying. They're just having like a video conference or a call, and then they say, okay, well, this may be appropriate for you. Try that, get back to us if it doesn't work. Now, that is not healthcare. It's not really helpful for the patient, and it doesn't give them the support that they need to trial a medicine that's new and to be able to feel like it's worth investing in medical cannabis because it's so expensive. They want to see a return on that investment. And if they're not seeing it, just like a banker, they're not going to continue investing.
I just say for me, like, you know, even though things, you know, for everyone who's fighting for that, you know, legalization that happens at the end of it, just remember that your fight is going to continue after it's legalized. Just because it's legalized doesn't mean that everything is going to get beautiful inside. It might actually expose some things inside of the system that really need to be fixed. So, yeah, I just kind of leave that with everybody to make sure that, you know, don't let your guard down after you might perceive that legalization as a victory. You know, stay on your toes, stay educated, stay in touch with those patients, and make sure that they don't fall to the wayside. That is vitally important. We're here because of these medical patients. Let's all be honest. There is no way we would be here without our medical patients. So please, 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 let's not let them fall by the wayside like we did here in Canada. It's frankly embarrassing.
I'm going to tap you nice then, Harry, again. Thank you again, Corey, and thank you to everyone that's listening in here and also on all other platforms. I want to mention if you're living in Europe or in Norway or in one of the Schengen countries, you can go to nordicherbson.com, and read about medical cannabis. You can also apply there and we will put in contact with a doctor and the right people that will help you find your medicine. So thank you to everyone in there, for Sana, Corey, David, Alexandra. Really, really appreciate. Really appreciate it.
Space for us to have these fantastic discussions. The Cannabis Makers, an amazing podcast. And I'd just like to say, please support Anna and I's movement. Hashtag free our medicine. Thank you, everybody.
Yeah, thank you guys for holding this space. And then I just want to take one bowl before we end. Hold on.
Yes, there we go.
Not quite bacon, but it works.
Thank you for that, Alexandra. Really, really appreciate that. We'll let all the listeners know in as well. I'm pretty sure the people listening in right now are either sitting there with a joint or a bowl, or they're thinking about getting a joint or a bowl. So thank you so much to everybody that's come in today and made episode 10 of The Cannabis Maker an awesome little segment on discussing patients' needs, what's going on in the medical cannabis markets across the globe, and how places have fucked up, how some people are dealing with it, and how the patients are really at the center of it all. And thank you so much, Corey, as well, for bringing that on point. We would be nowhere without the medical cannabis patients that we have today and all the work that has been done over the past 40, 50, 60, 70 years to get this plant back on track and to have it legitimized as a medicine the way it should be. So, thank you so much for everybody coming in today. Really appreciate it. You'll catch this episode as well if you want to listen in again, for the guys in the audience, for the guys and girls in the audience there, on Spotify, on iTunes, on Google Podcast, all the podcast platforms will be there. Thank you so much, guys. It's been wonderful. Take care. Stay high and stay happy.
The Cannabis Maker podcast is hosted by Nordic Herb Zone and WeCan. Nordic Herb Zone is Norway's first cannabis and hemp brand and makes the world's best organic hemp rolling papers. Get in touch with us today to discuss wholesale and distribution options for the world's best organic hemp papers with the slowest burn and the smoothest taste. NordicHerbZone.com. WeCan is one of the UK's leading providers of digital services, development, business, and marketing tools for your cannabis business. It includes digital marketing, SEO, web design, e-commerce development, web hosting, digital marketing, branding, advertisement, wholesale and distribution, and consultancy and business development. Head to WeCan.uk today to find out more.